Welcome to Writing the Wrong Way, where we talk about how writing works, how writers work, and why the best writers risk being strange. And I'm here with producer extraordinaire and screenwriter in embryo, Dan Vadeboncoeur, who is here to talk again about Meat House. Now, if you've listened to previous episodes, there's a bunch of episodes we have where Dan was talking through the script he's writing, which is called Meat House, the origins of which go back to a Super Pulp Science episode. So you can also check out kind of crossover episodes on Super Pulp Science with Dan, where he talks about the idea. And then we've got some in our backlog here. We talk about the idea, just kind of look for the Meat House, you know, showing up in the description or whatever. Search Meat House, one word.
One word. I think that I might be able to make a playlist. So I'll link to some stuff down below. And
people that's a great idea. Yeah. But in any case, why don't you catch us up, Dan, since it's been a while. Actually, it's been a while for me kind of doing a newish episodes of the podcast because like I've had a lot of backlog material coming in. I don't know if people noticed or not. Partly because of my own kind of forays into the filmic world of late. And so as a result, you know, it's been a little while since we caught up with Dan and he's been working on the script. So, you know, why don't you fill us in for starters, Dan, on what is going on with Meat House and where it's at?
Well, I'm ashamed to admit, I don't know why I feel shame for this, but I haven't done a ton, right? It's not...
You were talking like it was almost done.
No, I know. I was feeling overconfident. And I was hoping that I could deliver. Hold on a second. I'm just going to see. My levels are really high right now for some reason. I'm going to turn myself down. I have a really loud voice. No, I know. I was trying to be overconfident, so I thought I could deliver in the last minute. I'm a very, like... I am. I do this, like, constantly, and hate myself for it, that I am, like, basically... I think about things, and then when it comes down to crunch time, I just pour everything out, and it usually turns out pretty well. And I just was not able to bring it together that I have all these things, and I have all these cards and all these scenes and everything laid out for this film, for the script. And I just I want to talk to you about a few roadblocks that I've come across.
Sure.
Obviously, motivation being one of them, and finding the time is another one. But really, it's about, for me, I keep revising. Every time I go back to it, I start reading from the beginning, and I start rewriting. And then by the time I've spent an hour and a half doing that, and I haven't written anything new. So that was something I found. Every time it was a struggle for me to find the time and motivation to sit down to write. And then when I did, I found myself just rewriting what I'd already written.
You understand the solution to that, don't you?
What's that?
You don't reread what you've written.
Ah, I hate that. Okay, so I just skip to the end and keep going? Is that the...
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why would you say so? People do this all the time. So let me proffer you a thesis, Dan.
Okay.
Can you rewrite the first scene of a screenplay if the rest of the screenplay isn't written?
Yeah.
Why? How can you do that?
Because it's written. The first scene.
But it isn't written.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Since the script isn't written,
right?
There's no way to know if you are improving the first scene or not, or making it worse.
Okay.
Because you don't know how it feeds into later events.
Okay.
So there is no actual way to improve that scene in terms of the whole script. You can make the scene better, but the script isn't getting better. Does that make sense?
Yes.
In fact, the script could be getting worse because you might be getting attached to the scene that you need to delete.
Right. That's true. And then it might be harder to take
it out. Especially.
You're back off the mic, buddy.
I got to back up.
You get too angry.
So here's the thing that people do all the time. Now, I'm not going to, but like, I see this all the time, Dan. You're not alone.
No, I know.
Let me just first say that you're not alone in this. This is a phenomenon that, you know, I've done it. I've seen other people do it. All the time people will do this, and I can understand why. You know, so you write the opening scene, you know, you've been thinking about it, you kind of map things out. You've done actually more work than most people do before they start writing a script.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people just sort of dive in. But regardless of where they kind of, what prep work they do, they'll start at the start, right? They'll write the first scene. And then because it exists and because it's easier to rewrite it than to write more, it's just naturally easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll kind of keep going over it, and they'll justify in their head. It's like, oh, I gotta have a really good start, so you know, I gotta, you know, I'll just kind of work on it a little bit to get myself in the groove, and then I'll, you know, be easier to, just to get started.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, here's what happens. Invariably, when you get to the end of the script, that scene needs to be cut or needs to be massively altered to the point where you might as well just throw it away and write a new scene, even if the same events happen.
Mm-hmm.
Although usually it's a matter, almost always, it's better to just get rid of that scene completely because it's the first thing you wrote. It's going to be out of sync with the rest of the script, and probably you aren't really finding the full, complete, you know, version of that story until you've, you know, hit the end of a full draft. So what happens if you've been rewriting it a lot is you get married to it. And now, you know, you're like, you'll get married to the things you keep rewriting because you like those scenes, you want them to work. You just have the tendency to want to work on them more rather than writing new scenes. And so what happens is by the end of the thing being done, you're really married to these, the worst parts of the screenplay.
Okay.
And it happens with novels. I see it all the time. Mm. People get married to the worst parts of it and their worst ideas simply because they had them first.
Interesting.
And in fact, the reason that they had them first is in some respects why they don't work. Now, it may turn out that that scene works great and is fine in the end, but most commonly, it's not the case. Most commonly, the thing you write first, which initially kind of motivates you to get writing, is the worst thing that you have to cut.
Hmm. And so can you think of examples in which this, these things have actually made it through the production into the film? That
you
have
see it all the time. So the best examples are, in my own experience, it's that stuff that, like, I'm pretty aggressive about cutting things, mm-hmm. but for me what it'll be is the thing I cut last. Like, right before it goes to press,
okay.
You know, I'll cut it finally when I should have done it the first time. And it's it becomes real obvious in the editing process for books, because what you'll get is this outside editor at a certain point, and they'll just keep asking you, like, well, why is this thing here? So, like, I'll get a comment. I've done this a number of times. Actually, here's two examples from the book world that are sort of tied together. So I had this poetic sequence in my book, The Politics of Knives. The sequence is called When I Am Hell. And it's, you know, this sequence I had really been working on, and I had it in the book, and, you know, the editor kept saying, you know, this sequence just doesn't really fit in this book. He goes, it's kind of fine, it works fine, but it doesn't really work in the book. And it's kind of like, you know, throwing the book off in a certain way. And, you know, I kind of resisted, kept rewriting other things in the book. Finally, you know, and again, this is the one big thing that I had written first, prior to even having the idea for the book. And, you know, ultimately I end up cutting it from the book. So then, you know, and rewriting something new just to take its place. Then, you know, the next book I write is the National Gallery. So, of course, the first thing I do is try to find a place for this, you know, this poetic sequence again. Again, I've got a book with a bunch of, you know, poems and a bunch of these sequences. And I'm like, oh, it'll slot right in here. It fits perfectly. I put it in. I rewrite it all, you know, to kind of be more in vibe with the kind of style I was doing at that point. Get a different editor. Different editor saying the exact same thing about okay. The exact same work. You know, this thing is really great. There's nothing I can say to improve it, but it doesn't really work in this book. I don't understand why you have it in here. And so I fight about it. You know, I'm back and forth. I'm like, you know, moving it around, rewriting it, trying to make it fit. It doesn't fit. So ultimately, you know, I cut it. And of course, you know, that's the fix. Now, in screenwriting, I find it's often similar things. I see it all the time with directors where they have an idea, like a visual idea, that is really great. I used to see this a lot when I was when I used to run the shorts film program at the Guillemette Film Festival out of town here, I would get all these, you know, tapes and all these short films. Actually, really great stuff from, you know, really great people. Like,
yeah.
I screened, I think, Steve Kostanski's first short film called Carl way back when he was a kid in high school, kind of thing. But anyhow, I would get all these tapes in. I'd be looking at all these short films, and they would all have, every once in a while, I'd have the experience where I'm watching this film and it's just terrible. But in the middle of it, or at the end of it, there's this great moment, just this great moment. And then the rest of it's like just, but it didn't really fit with the rest of it.
Right.
And so all the time, it was a writer-director who had made that film. Because what they had is they had a really great idea for one shot or one scene, but it wasn't enough for a movie. But they just make a movie to go around it.
Okay. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like it was almost a reverse scenario. Now. It was like they're really married to this particular idea, but they don't actually have a real idea.
Right.
So they're just sort of manufacturing garbage to go around this awesome idea. What I find with screenwriters, that's more of a director's dilemma. With screenwriters, I find the curse is the opposite. It's like they have, you know, a bad idea or like a less good idea than the rest of the story. But it kind of is initiating them, or it just is the first thing they write before they're really in the groove of it. It's just like, you know, practicing like soccer or something, right? Like, you know, you're going to be less good at it at the start and then better later. But the difference between a soccer player and a screenwriter is you don't hang on to like your early practices.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, that may not be what's happening with you particularly, but whenever I see people rewriting stuff in that way when they haven't finished the draft, that's the danger they're flirting with.
Yeah.
So maybe it is, maybe it isn't the issue, but the danger you start to flirt with is the things that you know don't work, you're strengthening them to the point where you convince yourself they work, but they don't fit. And even if they work, they might not fit at this later point. So it's just better to just not do that.
Okay.
So whether it's going to ultimately be stuff you keep or cut or whatever, it's better to just push on through to the end because you really can't know whether scene, you know, 3 or 1 or 5 works unless you know what scene like 70, 80, 90 is.
Right.
And even if you have it mapped out in your head on a card, you still don't know like what words they're saying. You don't know what objects they're touching. You know what I mean? Like there's, you can't really set them up properly. Because what you're going to have to do ultimately is you're going to have to go back to the early scenes and rewrite them so they are like setting up things in the later scenes.
Right.
Like they see the fireplace and then later some guy gets burned in the fireplace.
Right.
Like that's the sort of thing that you can kind of map it out a little bit in the outline stage, but a lot of it is going to be figured out later in this kind of retrospective way, you know? So I maintain you can't efficiently and properly edit or rewrite anything in the early scenes if you haven't written the later scenes.
Okay.
At best, you can make the early scenes better in and of themselves, but then they start to become in danger of being disconnected from everything else and standing alone as these sort of silos of scenes that don't relate to the rest of the film.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that before. Okay.
Right, and sometimes those scenes can be good. The Joker and that Batman movie, or that Joker movie that came out recently, has a scene like that. It's a great scene where he climbs into the refrigerator.
Yeah.
That's an amazing scene. Now, the rest of the movie has nothing as good as that scene in it. But, you know, the scene doesn't fit in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about the recent Indiana Jones film and that final, not the final, but one of the scenes with the, let's just say the Roman scene or the Greek scene, whatever that was, that really felt out of place. And I feel like that was, and sometimes in movies, and especially these big Hollywood movies, I feel like there's this big like tentpole scene. Like Chris Pratt riding with dinosaurs on a motorcycle in Jurassic World. Like they came up with that first and then they kind of wrote this, how can we get him riding a motorcycle with all these raptors so we can plug it into this movie?
Now sometimes that's the best stuff. I'm not saying that those scenes are necessarily bad. It's just that they are disconnected from the rest of the thing. And so, you know, you flirt with the danger of it being bad as a result.
Yeah. And it's and regardless, it's holding me back from completing the rest of the script. So I need to just let it go.
Right.
And so the best practice is to open up the program and scroll right to the bottom and just continue where I left off. Then just continue the story.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, okay.
If for some reason you can't do that...
I think I can. I do think I can.
You know,
I think that I
just start new files, but...
Honestly, and the other thing is that coming from a background in journalism, until recently I was working at CTV, I'm used to rewriting my own stuff a lot. You have to do it very quickly when you're writing articles. You reread, rewrite, reread, and you do a couple times so you can get a good version of it. And so my instinct is to reread everything from the beginning when I open it up. And so I just kind of start doing that, and then I get lost.
See, when I write articles, I just start, I write them, and then I send it. I don't look at them again.
Well,
I don't edit
an editor.
Them. Well, no, I write a perfect draft.
Oh, okay. Look at this guy.
But I mean, it took years to get that way.
Okay.
And they pay so little that I can't justify reading it twice.
Well, I feel that pain for sure. And like, maybe I'm putting too many drafts into that, then. I don't know. Anyway.
I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that it's too long for that to work.
Exactly. Yeah,
in a screenplay world.
All right. So I will do my best to continue and to start doing that and build that habit. Now, I think what I really need from you is a deadline or some kind of a motivation to complete, because we haven't really been... we've been talking generalities. Oh, well, let's record next week. Let's do this. But I need like a solid date to have a first draft done by. So what I wanted to ask you was, when you do this for an assignment for students, how long do you give them to come up with a first draft for their script?
Well, I don't do a class where they're doing a full script. So I make, you know, so it's a little different.
Okay.
It's almost a math question. Like, how fast can you write?
I write very fast. The problem is it's dedicating the time and finding the time in the day to do it, which is, again, and I realize it's a time management issue for me, I hear stories about scripts being written in a weekend and stuff like that, and like, how is that really how it is done?
Yeah, I've done that, but those have been planned for months or whatever, or you can just hammer things out if you really know what you're doing, but it's not gonna be good.
No, I know,
but that's fine. It doesn't need to be good in a first draft.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a guy, it's Tony Burgess. Do you know who that is? He wrote Pontypool.
Oh, yeah. That's a good movie.
He writes it. This is how he writes books, and he writes scripts the same way, I believe. Is he'll just think about it, think about it, think about it, think about it. Then he'll sit down and write it front to back. Like, he'll take days, maybe.
Okay.
He won't do anything else. He'll sit there, front to back. He'll write a 200-page book in, like, 4 days without eating or sleeping or drinking except the minimum to survive.
Wow.
And he'll do this for scripts, I assume, as well. But he's a madman.
Okay, yeah, well.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not like...
maybe that's the extreme end of it, and there's a little way I can dial it back a bit and actually eat and sleep.
Right, like, so yeah, but people are doing when they say they write a thing in a weekend.
Right, yes.
You know what I mean?
They're dedicating like every waking hour to that and not doing anything else, right?
And maybe they're building up to that. Like, Michael Crichton used to like write, you know, on a regular schedule, but then as he got near the end of a book, he would book a hotel room, and he'd go to the hotel room, and then he'd write constantly until he was done the book. Because otherwise he would, you know, he liked the flow of it. Like, he was getting a real momentum going, so why not just keep the momentum going? But also, you know, he had the anxiety of, if something interrupts me and I break the momentum, you know, maybe it's going to have less energy, you know, in the end of the book. But then there's also, I think, I would probably suspect the other side of it for him probably was, it's too tempting to not finish. Because a lot of people, as they get close to the end, they'll get slower and slower and slower for whatever reason.
That's interesting, too.
And
so slow to start and then slow at the end as well? That it goes quickly in the middle?
It depends who you are. I mean, I don't know. It depends on lots of things. Like, some people have a weird, you know... their anxiety is to never finish. That makes them feel better.
Okay.
And so they'll get 80% of the way from the end, they'll just stall out. And other people, you know, don't have that problem. So, you know, I don't know. It's going to depend, I guess. But, like, I wouldn't recommend people hammer things out. Like, I've written, I think the fastest I ever wrote a script, a feature film script, was I wrote 10 pages a day for 10 days and basically turned it out 100 pages. Mm-hmm. But that's just because I had a weird, I mean, I was just doing it as an experiment, and it, you know, the script's not great, but it became like the early draft of the Dirk Dirksen comic.
Long did that take you? 10 pages per day?
All day.
All day. Okay.
Like good, like decent pages.
Okay.
Huh. But I could have written them faster if I knew what it was. I had no, I had no story. I had nothing prepped. Nothing at all. I had the title, Dirk Dirksen versus the Demons from Mars, and I made everything else up.
It's a great title.
Yeah, but I had, but if I had planned it out,
right.
When I've planned it out, I've done it faster than that. But I just can't remember. I know I did 10 and 10 because it was an experiment. But then I remember, I think the fastest I've ever drafted something out on a tight deadline was like, I did 50 pages in like 3 days or something. Hmm. But I mean, it just takes you all day. Like, you know, what's the point of that, really? If you don't have to do it.
Right. No, I guess. But if I have time.
But what's a sustainable pace for you, I guess?
Well, like I mean,
per week. I would think in terms of weeks. Like per week. How often, how much can you write?
Like I want to. What I want to be able to do is to dedicate time to it every day, as far as like an hour per day. Is that a reasonable
Well, what can
thing?
You write in an hour?
What can I write? How much can I write?
If you had an hour a day, would you write one page a day?
More than that. I'm sure I could write a couple pages at least.
Let's say you could only write one page a day.
Okay.
Let's say that was your goal, write one page a day. Then it would take you 3 months to write a feature film script.
Okay.
So I feel like that is a reasonable pace for somebody who's done the prep work that you've done. I love how Gregory is just taping shit in the background.
Well, he's just waiting.
Like slamming.
And like, nope.
So like you could write faster than a page a day. And, you know, if you do, great. But what I always advise people is like, I find people make ambitious goals. It's better to make a hell week goal. Like if you have a hellish week where everything's going badly, yeah, maybe you were trying to write 10 pages or 5 pages a day or something, but you know, surely you could write one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you're having a hellish week where everything's going badly and wrong, you know, take a break from it just to do something for yourself. You know, spend 20 minutes writing a page or an hour writing a page or whatever. And that's the goal. And if you do more than that, great. But set it like a minimal achievable goal. Now, scientists will tell you, don't even do that. Plan to write for 2 minutes a day.
Oh, wow. Just 2 minutes?
Yes. Wow. That's the science slash, you know,
and
advice.
What is the science now, that once you start, you continue, you will end up writing for more than 2 minutes?
Yeah. To accomplish something, you have to. But it's just the building the habit comes first.
Yeah.
Versus like trying to produce a certain amount.
Okay.
But the practice of sitting in the chair for 2 minutes, you can scale it. If you can't sit in a chair and write for 2 minutes, then you can't, there's no way you can scale it up to an hour.
Yeah, that's true.
So if something's going wrong with that, then it's something else is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. But people will start like, oh, I'll do write 2-3 hours a day. It's like, well, when that fails to happen, it's hard to see why. But it could be that it's such an unsustainable structure you've constructed for yourself that you couldn't even do 2 minutes.
Right.
And so 3 hours is, you know, insanity. Now, but if you don't, I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, if you really think it's a habit thing, then theoretically you should just try to sit down for 2-5 minutes a day and just do that and just focus on that and then scale it up if you can get that in place.
Okay.
But I think what I eat often, you know, less scientifically perhaps advise is people just try to do a page a day.
Okay.
Because a page a day is a sustainable, achievable pace for many people, and like a page per weekday. And then also if you write a page per day or a page per weekday, you can actually construct, you know, you can write 3-4 movies a year.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I guess so. If you, yeah, that's math. Now, what would you suggest in case? So that means that I probably will be stopping and starting. I might be stopping and starting in the middle of scenes.
Yeah.
Right. So is that like, should I reread that first scene to kind of keep going into it, or should I just kind of pick up where it?
If it's not distracting you.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not, you're telling me that
if
it
I
is.
Don't if I don't keep start rewriting the scene, then I can do that. I don't. I'm just trying to think about.
Hemingway used to stop halfway through a sentence, and because then he could just finish the sentence, and that would be the start of his next session.
I want to talk to you. You know all this stuff, and I don't know anything.
So I think that's the nice trick for people, because you know, then all you have to do is read the start of the sentence, finish the sentence, and you're kind of back into it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Hmm. So, you know, again, if you could do more than it, like you sit down, you do a page, and you're like, oh, I still feel the energy, I still got time, you know, whatever, great. But yeah, I would, you know, maybe try to plan to do half an hour, 20 minutes, and get a page done.
Okay.
If you can make that like the goal, then theoretically you're in the realm of like 5 pages a week. Let's say you're taking the weekends off. Maybe you don't want to, but I always take weekends off because that's how I think about it. I write on the weekdays.
Right, because it's your job.
Yeah, and so for me, it's that'll be my kind of goal is I typically have to write more than that, but I'll minimally goal it as a page a day, 5 days a week, 5 pages a week, 20 pages a month, et cetera.
Okay.
But if you start doing the math, you're writing 300 pages a year, you're writing a book a year.
Wow.
Or a movie a year or two movies a year, whatever it is,
All right. Well, I'll start then, a page a day.
The other thing that's nice about a page a day is you can just print it out and then put it in a pile, and then you can see the page pile growing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really a visual marker of the achievement, whereas it's hard to... so much about writing is abstract and unquantifiable. The more you can quantify it and you can make it into a numbers game, the better it is. Mm-hmm. David Robertson, the writer David Robertson, I remember once I was kind of talking to him, and he was talking about how somebody had asked, I think I was actually with him now that I think about it, because we were at an awards show together, and someone was asking, how do you write so much? Because he writes a crazy amount. And he's like, if I have to write, 30,000 words, then I'll just think, okay, well, I'll write 1,000 words a day for 30 days. he's like, not rocket science.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like, there's no magic and mystery to it.
Yeah. See, that thing is, 1,000 words doesn't scare me. I could write 1,000 words.
Yeah, I can write.
In terms of that, I'm my articles on a regular basis were 500, 2,000 words.
A page of a screenplay is 250 words.
Yeah, okay.
It's so just that it's slow.
Yeah, but it's the process of switching back and forth between, and I'm using the software and everything, so that's going much better, but it's still a little bit interrupting, or you have to kind of get it to the flow.
Well, I find is slow about screen. So for me, if you're talking just, if you want to just quantify stuff, so I can write... I can comfortably write 3,000 to 5,000 if I had just the whole day to focus on it. I could write 3,000 to 5,000 words of nonfiction in a day, no problem. And I can write 2,000 to 3,000 words of fiction, probably closer to the end of 2 easily in that all day. And then for screenplays, I can write maybe 5 to 10 pages max.
Okay,
of decent writing, because I find what slows me down with screenwriting and comics is sort of similar. I'm going to mostly be working on comics later today, and my goal will be to kind of write 5 pages, 10 pages, and if I get that, that's going to take me a while though, because the problem with screenwriting and comics to me is the same. You got to start translating all the visuals in your head. And so then you got to do things. I got to stand up and stand in a position and see okay, if I'm standing here, then this other guy is standing over here. How do they have to step toward one another? I got to start, doing the blocking in my head and stuff. I find it very slow for that reason. And then also I find the dialogue writing to be slow personally, in screenwriting. It's just, I don't know. I just find it is a slower type of writing on some level. Mm-hmm. With comics, it's not so slow because I can just change the letters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So it's I can kind of have a worse draft and it's fine, Something that speeds it up, though, Gregory taught me a trick years ago if you just write the dialogue only.
Yeah, and he talks to himself as he walks down the street. That also
Is if you just write the dialogue only, and you're just getting the beat structure back and forth of the scene between these two people.
Yeah, now, yeah.
None of that will be usable, I found. I can't really use any of that, but it gets me a draft real quick, and then it just is a rewriting game, which I find faster.
Yeah, and I think that's will come much faster for me once I have the draft done. I'm sure that I will be much better at revising, and because I apparently get stuck on doing it. Can't help but rewrite my own words. Okay, so that's good advice as well. Excellent.
Yeah, but I would say for you, so let's say, if you commit to writing 5 pages a day, a page a day, 5 pages a week, sorry. Mm-hmm. What's that? 20, let's say it's going to take you 4 months at that pace. Mm-hmm. If you don't, move faster, it'll take you 4 months.
Okay.
But then, you know, if you were to commit to that, I guess, you know, how would you want to do it? Do you want to like turn in five pages and then come on the podcast and
No. I want to finish.
What do you want to do?
What I want to do is that then do it and then come back and report back to you as far as what I've done that week, and then just say, okay, did you do your five pages this week? Why not? And if I'm not doing it, then you give me shit.
Yeah, no, it works for me.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's the best, you know, sort of thing, though, was to have a achievable goal that isn't crazy.
Yeah.
You could always do more, but at least do this, you know. And if you miss it, the real key of it is if you screw up and miss it, just don't do that twice.
Okay.
That's sort of what they say about the gym, too. Like, if you're going to the gym, yeah, you miss a workout, just don't miss out two workouts in a row, and you'll be fine.
Okay. Otherwise, it's a slippery slope, you're done.
Once you miss, you're at that, you know. You start to get into like, am I breaking the habit?
Okay.
Here's the other thing I'll say for you though, Dan, is like what I've always advised students. So when I start my creative writing classes, one of the first things I teach them is, you know, the way that I like to approach writing is to think about it in different terms than I think a lot of people think about it. So what I think the first thing you should do if you want to be a like creative writer is you should just pay attention to what you're doing. In this way, try to make it easier to write and not make it harder to write. A lot of people they'll read an article on like how writers are supposed to be, and they'll just be like, oh, I guess I need to do that. But really, they're just like making it harder for themselves. Like I always say, like, just try to make it easier. If something's difficult, try to find an easier way to do it. So one of the things that I will say, for example, is if you're stuck, just start, look in your refrigerator, and just if you don't know what to write, look, open your refrigerator and write about what's in your refrigerator. And it sounds like a stupid joke, but it actually makes a lot of sense. If I'm writing a scene and I don't know what like should happen in a scene, for example, I'll just have the characters look out the window, and I'll just start describing what they see out the window. Because then they're doing something, and I've got an object to describe. I'll often just pick an object up in the room and I'll be like, I'll describe that. Mm-hmm. So like when I was writing, if you read my book, The Lightning of Possible Storms, there's a short story in there called The Nightmare Ballad of the Drunken Brand Identity with a cameo by Shakespeare and a title that cannot get worse. And in that story, there's all this, every time I didn't know what to do, I would just have the main character talk about Shakespeare. Because my daughter was taking Shakespeare in her high school at the time, and I was also coincidentally teaching a different Shakespeare play at the university. Mm-hmm. So I had Shakespeare in my head. So anytime I was stuck on the story, because I was trying to write the story at the time, I would just like put in Shakespeare. There's actually a part of that story where the main character is sitting in his office, and he's like this drunk, you know, blackout drunk, going through this like terrible time, right? So one of his awesome mates walks in his office and he goes, hey, he goes, what's with this memo you sent out? And then I just reproduce, he's like, what memo? And then you see the memo he sent, which is just, I retyped the cast list of King Lear. So that's it. He just sent the cast list of King Lear to everybody. And then they're just talking about that. Because I didn't know what to write. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, maybe I'll just... I'm like, what else could I steal from Shakespeare? I go, what about the cast list from King Lear? I'll just put it in because my daughter was taking King Lear in high school.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll just literally retype the cast list from King Lear because I don't know what to write. I'll just retype something Shakespeare wrote. And then they can just talk about that. Why the hell would you send this out? He's like, well, just to stick it to this other guy because, you know, he's not on the list.
Right.
This is like the special project team.
Sure.
Like... But like that stuff makes for great writing. Like if you know, when you kind of are making it easy on yourself, like it's not hard to do that, but people don't do that. What they do instead is they do the hardest possible thing, which is they'll sit in a room and be like, oh my God, what should I write? I got to think of something to write. It's like, well, no, why do you have to think of something to write? Just write about this yellow piece of paper of, you know, this pad of paper here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it'll
go to Starbucks. Easier. Write about how you went to Starbucks.
Yeah.
I have, you know, like anything you write is better than not writing something.
I gotcha.
But it's crazy the things that people do. So they'll have in their heads, you know. So I'll say, for example, like one of the things I tell students is like, just take for a week, just notice when you do and don't write, and like if you do start writing something. just note down, like, well, what is it that helped you? Like, are you drinking a coffee or are you not drinking anything? Are you at a desk or are you on the couch? You know, are you here or are you there? Like, is there music playing or is there not music playing? Like, what got you into writing? Or if you didn't write, if you had in your head, like, oh, I should write something today, and then you didn't do it, like, well, why didn't you do it? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I did years ago, I won this award for a book I'd written. It wasn't for a book I'd written, but I won this Manitoba Book Award this is because I was talking about Robertson. So me and Robertson both got the same award, which we had, like, as a joke for a little while. We were joking to one another because the award was called Most Promising Manitoba Writer. And so our joke was, like, Robertson's joke, really, it was... Because he had published like 10 books by the time or something. I was like, what are you more like? I was
Who's
like,
more promising here?
I was like, yeah, we were like making jokes like this. And he goes, well, he goes, it just means I make the most promises. Doesn't mean I fulfill any of my promises.
Right.
But anyway, so I won this award and it had like this cash prize. And I remember at the time I needed a new computer. So I bought this MacBook that is over rotting in the corner here. And one of the reasons I bought a MacBook and spent like a bunch of money on a fancy MacBook versus buying a cheaper, you know, computer is that the MacBook would turn on in like 30 seconds. And what I found, and it was a laptop. And what I had found was I would go to my computer and I'd be like, oh, I got to write this thing down. I'd go to my computer, I'd turn it on. And then while I was waiting for it to boot up, I would go do something else, and then I wouldn't come back to it. So just the fact that the thing booted up quickly, and I could sit down, press the button, it would come on, then I could start typing, that alone increased the amount of writing I did like tenfold.
Wow.
It's crazy. And the fact that I could take it on the bus, you know, and I could take it to the coffee shop. I saw Chadwick writing on the bus, and I was like, I should be writing on the bus. You know, and like
I've tried that too.
I didn't really like it, but just things like that. Like, what are the things that make it easier for you to write?
Yes.
Do more of those things.
Yes.
What are the things that make it harder for you to write?
Make it fun to write. Make it a fun activity.
Make it fun, or just make it like not hard.
Okay.
Like people have in their head, oh, I gotta wear these shoes, you know, or whatever it is. You know, it's like.
Well, I mean, athletes are very superstitious, right? Why not write?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you why not. Because then you don't write anything.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But if it helps you write, great.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
But that's like, I find like just in their practice also, like people say to me, oh, they'll be like, I don't know, I'm not very good at writing description. I go, here's the best way to write description. Don't use certain vowels. So just pick a vowel and don't use it. So now, so now you know, you can't use the letter A, but you got to just, you can't use the letter O. The exercise I give them is describe an orange, but you're not using the letter O.
Yeah.
So you can't use any of the words that you normally use, like round. You can't, you know, say it's sour. You can't say, you know, it's an orange. You can't say it rolls. You can't say any of the things you normally say. So you're forced to use different language to describe the orange now. And therefore, you're going to say something more interesting than you'd normally say.
Okay.
You have to.
Right. It's tart.
Right.
Sweet.
You're literally going to use words you wouldn't normally use. Yeah. You're going to have to describe it in poetic terms instead of standard terms. So you're just going to accidentally write better description than you would if left to your own devices.
Peely.
It's a good example of like making it easier for yourself. Really, like, it's become a game now. You're not worrying about like, is my description good? You're just trying to write description.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. I think it's about getting out of your own head about this stuff too, right? Just not, I used to say a thing to students and I should follow my own advice. Don't be afraid to suck. That's I think it's an Adventure Time quote. I think there's a thing where Jake says sometimes you really have to suck at something before you can be good at something, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
So it's just kind of that fear of sucking, or that fear of like, I don't know, something like that that kind of holds you back sometimes in the writing.
Yeah, process. I think that's very really common for writers in particular, because a lot of them are perfectionist or have a perfectionist streak, you know.
Yeah.
But even just the simple level of like, if it is cold in the room, maybe put a sweater on.
Okay.
Right? Like, yeah. In writing, there's things that are parallel to that. It's like, oh, it's hard to write this scene, so maybe I'll just write a different scene.
Okay.
Oh, I don't have an idea for this story. Maybe I'll work on a different story. Do you know what I mean? Like, people won't do that.
Yes. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's they have it in their head. They got to write it from start to finish. But why?
Right. Okay.
Or whatever.
All right. So, 5 pages by next week. That's my deadline.
Yeah, there you go. Page day, 5 pages by next week. Don't miss 2 sessions. And, you know, don't be afraid to take the weekends off.
All right.
Or vice versa, if you're writing more on the weekends, maybe.
No. I would be open to taking weekends off. I think that's a good idea. I have the luxury of having a job that doesn't really require full-time hours. So I have a little bit more time. You know, I think I do anyway. But, yeah, as long as I can dedicate time to it and focus. So I'm going to do that. 5 pages. That's all I'm going to worry about. 5 pages.
And you know what else you should do that I always recommend is, if possible, you do it before anything else. It's like paying yourself first in finances. What they say is, if you get $100 and you owe, you know, $100, you don't pay them.
Okay.
First you pay yourself.
And then you pay
$20, and then you give them, you know, the $80 or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But you do not pay your bills before you pay yourself.
Okay.
They can wait for their money.
They can.
And the same is true of your writing. You know, before you write for your boss, you write your page for yourself.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you'll never do it.
Yeah.
Because you'll never have more time.
Right. Okay. I will. I will do it. You're looking at me like, you better do it.
Dan Brown. This is the last thing I'll say. Okay. So Dan Brown, I remember, actually, there's another thing in my Lightning Impossible Storms book. The first story is called National Bestseller. And in it, the character writer, Jonathan Ball, is like stuck and doesn't, you know, he's trying to write a national bestseller, but he just can't accomplish it. So he, at one point, he buys Dan Brown's masterclass and is like going through the Dan Brown masterclass videos. And I actually, in the story, I'm quoting from the actual Dan Brown masterclass videos and so on. Anyway, but one of the things that Dan Brown says in that, which is really interesting, which it didn't make its way into the story, unfortunately, but so Dan Brown is talking about his schedule, his writing schedule. And Dan Brown gets up at 4:30 in the morning and he goes to his office and he starts writing and, you know, does his thing. And he basically is done like his full work day by like 12:30, his full writing work day. And the reason he does this is because otherwise people keep like hassling him and interrupting him and so on and so forth, and he can't get anything done. Now, he's Dan Brown, the, you know, multimillionaire, biggest success in the world, writer Dan Brown. Mm-hmm. He can't get people to leave him alone to write.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to get up before them.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because it never ends.
Okay.
Because nobody wants you to write. That's the other thing I like to tell students, is nobody wants you to write. And so you have to just understand that and not fight it. You know, you have to realize it, and then, you know, it's like, if you're going to do it, you got to just do it. Make it easier for yourself, because no one else will make it easier for you. They might think they are. They might say, think they are supporting you, but they aren't supporting you. They just think they are.
Yeah, yeah, I get you.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not their fault, but they don't understand. So I'm looking forward to hearing all about more progress on Meat House.
All right.
Thanks for chatting, and keep writing the wrong way.